I wish they'd hurry up with that transmission. I want to go to bed.
I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may
you
just
like music.
Rekindle your will to live.
Why did you put a record on?
It only happens here.
Night shift.
Mondays. Midnight.
Night shift.
Here.
The shift from midnight till 3 a.m.
During the shift.
just a little bit unpleasant. This is going to be just a little bit unpleasant.
Night Shift, my favorite
show. It's going to be just a little bit unpleasant.
Night Shift.
Don't move. Stay very still. Don't talk.
How long does this take?
How long?
Thank you.
70 billion people of Earth, where are they hiding?
Hi, this is Valley Forge, Berkshire Sequoia. Valley Forge, Berkshire Sequoia.
This is Comm Central. Channel open for executive order AUC 3423. Listen to this, boys.
That all men are created equal.
Mike Sargent.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Well, it's been a while since Joe Masseri has been here.
And, yes.
It's good to see you across the board there, Joe Masseri. And we have a jam-packed show. We have a lot here. We have going to compress time because Joe's only going to stay for a certain amount of time. We have limited Joe time, so that's cutting the music short, early. But, Joe, we have a special guest star. That would be you.
Thank you. I know I was special.
Yes, you're the special guest star. This is Jennifer, who has been here on the show before. Jennifer, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So I have to say, I'm surprised you. She actually requested to come on the show.
Wow.
Joe, yes. So clearly the medicine isn't working.
Well, it seems like the two of you are convalescing. I hope I don't catch anything tonight. So.
No, she's convalescing. I've stayed away from her.
But you asked for medication.
Well, you know, it's my allergy. For some reason, today, I'm sneezing like a fiend. No, you're sick. You said you're sick.
No, I didn't say I was sick.
Disease.
Just in the brain.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, Joe. Just, you know. But what do you think of this? Spring. Snow. What, you know, what's your take on all of that?
I have no idea.
All right.
No idea. I mean, I can remember times in my youth when, you know, there was an ice storm on Easter Sunday.
So you remember an ice storm on Easter Sunday?
Yes, we went outside and everything looked like it was covered in glass.
That sounds like a play.
That's how intense it was.
Okay.
But, you know, weather, Mother Nature, she is fickle.
Yes, she is. Perhaps, you know, I don't want to say anything that sounds wrong. But,
you censoring yourself around me.
I am censoring myself. Yes, I am. But here's the deal, Joe. So I've known you for quite some time.
Quite some time.
And I do have a theme for the show, but we have a lot to cover here.
Okay.
But I've known Jennifer for quite some time. Decades, as it were. So the theme of the show, Joe, I need to think about this. You know, and you can just give me two. Just life lessons, things you learn that you kept with you for the rest of your life. You learned it, that's it. You only have to learn it that one time. And you kept it for the rest of your life. And you know, if it's really helped you, even better. Mm. So just two great life lessons that you just, you know, you could have learned them at an early age. That's fine.
Don't drink the milk, it's spoiled.
Well, that's you know, that, you know, plant corn early.
But
I also want to say that I do have an interview with the writers of a new film called A Quiet Place, and an interview with the composer of A Quiet Place. That's Marco Beltrami. But I really liked A Quiet Place. I don't know if you know the premise of the film, Joe. You know the premise because Joe read the script. Joe read the script and he was not impressed, okay? But I saw the film. And I've never really seen John Krasinski, what else he's directed, you know. I know this is his third film, and it's his first, you know, major.
Oh, didn't he do brief interviews with Hideous Men?
Perhaps.
He did.
Okay, perhaps. Okay, I haven't looked at his, you know, CV. But I do think he has an interesting career. You know, he's Jack Ryan now on TV that I don't understand. We were talking about that earlier. I don't understand how you go from Harrison Ford to John Krasinski. But, you know, he's director. And the film, A Quiet Place, here's the premise. It's sometime in the near future. Aliens come. They invade. They wipe us out. And we learn too late that the way they track us, they're blind, but the way they track us
is Facebook.
No.
No, that's ICE. ICE is doing that.
That's a different
wrong monster.
Different wrong monster. But they have a heightened sense of sound. So if you make a sound, even like you stumble, you knock over or something, they'll find you. That's it. Mm-hmm. So
kind of like so radar. The people,
no, yeah, like more like sonar. And they, you know, you see the biology of the creature and everything. But all I'm going to say is that's the premise. And okay. So the people who have survived they're quiet people. They still use sign language. And it's fun. It's like a Twilight Zone episode. And I liked it on three levels. I liked it as a film lover. You know, I liked mm-hmm. Twilight Zone. I liked it as a film critic, you know, you know, with the harumph. And as a filmmaker, I really appreciated you know, the vision of the script, you know. So I got a chance to talk to the two writers, so I have an interview with them that I'm going to play, even though Joe poo-pooed it.
Joe poo-pooed it.
John Krasinski and Emily Blunt, who is his wife.
Oh, yes, that's
in real
his
life,
wife.
In real life, so they play a married couple. So it's worth seeing.
Got her for scale.
Well, she encouraged him to direct, and then she was like, all right, listen, you should put me in it. And he was like, oh, okay. And so there it is. But, you know, they both do a good job. I like Emily Blunt. She's fine.
We'll let her live.
You'll let her live. Mm-hmm. You'll let her continue her career. So I have that. I also have an interview with. Let me tell you what I got. Let me tell you what I got, Joe.
Tell me what you got. What you really got.
What I got. What I really really.
None
got.
Of this speculation.
No speculation, Joe. But I have a bunch of things I do want to ask you about. By the way. Joe Basiri.
I see, because I am the authority of
because you are the authority. So it's Brian Woods and Scott Beck are the writers, but I also have an interview with there's a documentary called A Summer in the Forest, and it's about, I don't know if you know what LARCH is. It's a facility for disabled people. It was really the brainchild of this French humanist, I guess you'd call him, in the 60s. Pretty fascinating story. So but that'll be much, much later in the show. So, but one thing I want to say, what works about A Quiet Place, and it's going to lead into one of the stories we're covering here on the show, is that, you know, you live in constant fear. You know, like if you could, you know, you're trying to live, but at any time you could accidentally do something. And it really works in the film. The film, I think, is structured very well. But you were mentioning something that you were reading about Syria, you know, and just the idea of living in fear.
Yes.
The idea of not being able to say anything, fear of repercussions, or you know, which, you know, we read about, we hear about, like what it was like in Nazi Germany, you know, but it's a reality today for many people. And it's interesting, Joe, I wanted to know your take on this, the whole situation with David Hogg and this Fox commentator, and so he's 17 and he calls for the companies to boycott, and they boycott. And, you know, the power that, let's just say, celebrities or people in the media have. And then you saw the Sinclair thing. You saw that? Yes, Joe? Okay. So, I just wanted to know your thoughts on where you think we're headed in terms of how fear might control us. I mean, you know, it can be used in a good way as a tool, you know, like to, you could be shamed or lose your career if you're a, you know, a sexual abusive man, or you could lose your sponsors if you're a, you know, irresponsible media person. So what are your thoughts on all this, Joe?
First of all, as evolution dictates, anybody who lives in an environment where these things are starting to come to light, those...
What do you mean? Anybody meaning human beings? Us in this country?
The different things that are going on. That, like, for example, it happened with the whole trickle-down of Harvey Weinstein and Never Again movement and all that. There are these individuals out there who are predators and who have acted in a certain way. And now that behavior has been put a spotlight on, you know, it's like they haven't been caught because they're not intelligent. In fact, they are. And so what happens is, I think to some degree, some of these people, you know, whether we're talking about that or we're talking about politicians in certain part of the world, you know, they act in a certain way.
Like here?
Even here. At some point, the smarter ones will realize that, you know, they're getting caught and how they're getting caught, and will modify their game, and it will go underground for a while until, you know, the method to their madness is revealed and they are called out by the public. But it never really goes away. It just, the faces change, the players, you know, change, maybe some of the rules of the games change, but the overall game itself is still the same game that's been played over and over again through history. So, I mean, the only thing now that's happening that's different is that the bastions of truth that have been out there reporting on this and bringing to our attention are called into question. So therefore, there are fewer people who are believing it as wholeheartedly as we did in the past.
Okay, I don't know that I agree with part of what you're saying, but Jennifer, did you have anything you want to add to what he's saying here? Do you agree, disagree?
So you don't think we're on the verge of overthrowing the patriarchy?
Not to the degree that we would like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to wait to see what happens at the elections. And even at that point, the people who are manipulating the funds to put people in power, what good does it if it appears that the patriarchy has tumbled, but the people in place are put there by the patriarchy that controls
or the Russians
first string? So I don't know if so much it is the Russians. It was our own naivete that a certain section of America, if they were influenced by those things, went for it. I mean, after all...
But it could just be that even if they're meddling, they could tip the scales.
I think the bigger problem is the Electoral College, because let us not forget that Hillary won the popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was not for the Electoral College, we would have Hillary in office now and not Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it did work to a degree. Yes, she did not win by an even bigger margin that in the likelihood had they not meddled she could have, but it's you know, the whole electoral college situation that put us in the situation we are now.
Well, here's what's two things I want to bring in here. I mean, part I was dealing with fear because I'm curious to where your thoughts and where you're going. So you think nothing's going to change. I agree with you in the sense that I think whatever the power structure that's been in power, you know, from where I'm sitting, you know, white people are not going to give up the ghost. They're not like, yeah, whatever. Okay, we've been in, but we're not going to leave it. You know, and I think, you know, it's been
that way.
Well,
they'll kill themselves with opioids.
Well, you know, that's a whole other conversation. But I just think, you know, whoever's in power, they're not going to give it up. In whatever society, whatever culture, throughout history.
Well, the 1%. As long as there is 1%.
The Romans, the Greeks, the Hebrews, whoever it was that was in charge at whatever time. They're not going to give it up easy. So I agree with you in that respect, you know, and you know, we live in an obscure, a time of, interestingly enough, while the dichotomy of the fact that, you know, we have more access to information than ever, but things are more obscured. And,
well,
and
let me put it to you this way too.
Yes.
Okay. I have been amazed by that commercial that Common does, where the script for the commercial points out that we have more technology, more power at our disposal than any other time in history, and what will you do with it, okay? But yet, the problem is that not only do we need to get back to teaching civics in school to students, we do not teach children to be logical. Okay? Also, my good friend Victor Cohen, the artist...
Where's my fascinating soundbite?
Recently did a TED Talk on cell phones and teenagers and how, you know, the parents of today, and he said that he was guilty of it too and saw this and realized it, took these devices and put it into their kids' hands without any kind of guide manual of or anything of integrating that with a child. And how...
Wait. All right. Go ahead. I'm listening.
So this is a way of manipulating the masses. So we, you know, now have these logarithms that are being engineered by companies to keep people engaged for longer time and take up their supervision, and kids don't know how to think They just know how to react. And what I'm saying is, what this comes down to is if this is what's coming, I am currently in a situation where I sit in an office and I hear conversations and I see things unfolding and I say, my God, when the lights go out, thank God I know how to make fire without matches or have my flashlight on my phone or how to read a map.
All right, now hold on a second. Go ahead.
So here's a quintessential example. 9 years ago, I created these forms, right? Which now somebody else is having these guys who are tech guys in our office redo. But the tech guys had problems with the forms and had to come back to me because they didn't know how to manipulate the fields within Microsoft. So if we're
so you're saying that only Joe can manipulate the fields.
No, you're supposed to be somebody who's certified in Microsoft. You should have known what the problem is. You should have known that this is.
Okay, where are you going, Joe?
So this is people that I'm working with that are supposed to be specialists in their field who's. Are working with something that's very simple.
So in other words, you're talking about the dumbing down of our society.
Totally. Like, so we had a problem in the office today. For some strange reason, one of the guys in IT messed something up, and our fax/scanner that sits right at our desk, okay, they couldn't send the email. So people were going to walk to the other ends of the office to... scan stuff so they could email it to themselves.
Well, it's good they were walking.
Well, yeah, it's good that they're walking. But nobody dawned on them that we have all these hotels that come in and give us USB flash drives. Okay? There's a flash drive on the damn printer. They could have scanned to the flash drive, taken it over to the...
So you're saying that even though you're older than a lot of these folks, you're more technically adept.
No, they don't know how to think. They don't know how logically.
Joe, I totally agree with you. I'm shocked by how many people, including, you know, all the way up at the top, who do not think things through. We are not a think things through society. You know, think things through means, you know, have a plan.
Not even a plan, just the ability.
No, a plan.
And my grandfather, and I do this for my nieces and nephews, and I've done this for my daughter, gave me a copy of the complete Sherlock Holmes canon. And he said, if you read this.
And you fired it.
And if you read it from cover to cover, you will learn everything that you need to know about deductive reasoning.
Okay.
Okay. And that's.
So wait, who gave you this?
My grandfather.
And so you think every child should get this?
I gave my goddaughter a copy. I get my nephew a copy. I gave my daughter a copy. And you know what? They have to learn to think for themselves. And that takes us to the problem of the news and everything else. People want it handed to them. They don't want to research it. Knowledge is power. And when you make it your own, it can't be taken away from you. So people have this...
Sound a little like Byron there for a second.
People have this pablum fed to them, and they take it as gospel truth without looking at any...
I agree with you 1,000%, Joe.
And that's
where
the fear comes in. The fear comes... In fact, one of the latest things... FOMO, fear of missing out.
Fear
of missing out. The woman I work with and for...
Wait, FOMO?
Fear of missing out.
Where have I been? Fear of missing out. You know why? Because I've been missing out.
There you go. And so, you know, the woman I work with and for has to be on the cutting edge of everything going on out there. She wangled her way a
wangled.
Ticket.
Is wangled a word?
Wrangled.
Okay.
Wangled is a new word.
More wangling. Is that a thing?
Yes, it is a thing.
Is that like, can you wangle for a FOMO? Or wangle out of a FOMO?
No, if you're experiencing FOMO, you're wangling to
get out of it. You wangle to get out of FOMO. Gotcha.
So she, you know.
I'm glad you're here, Joe.
Wanted to go see the Bowie exhibition at the Brooklyn Museum, wanted the more expensive tickets, didn't want to pay for it. But. knew a friend who had an interest, and anyway, she got to go.
All right, I didn't follow how the connectivity to the other thought about the stupid people.
Because that's the fear of missing out. You want to be popular. If I don't go to this, if I miss this, if I'm not one of the first people, I'm not.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that that's a thing. I think that's always kind of existed. I'm a little more fascinated with the side product of you know, relevancy. You know, everybody, you know. It is one thing to have been famous and then, you know, lose it and nobody cares, right? You lose your relevancy. But everybody wants to be relevant. Everybody wants to be a celebrity. So in this age we have where people are,
but see, that's,
you know, constantly, you know, checking to see if they're being acknowledged.
Well, the two things are, A, as Dave Chappelle said,
yes,
you know, you can be famous, you can be unfamous, but once you're infamous,
well, that lasts longer.
There's no going back.
Infamous lasts
there's
longer.
There's no going back.
There's definitely infamy.
And the other thing is that, you know, when we talk about these people who are in the spotlight, you know, there is always the one or two people not in the spotlight, hiding in the darkness in the wings, that is getting paid and controlling.
You mean like
their celebrity?
Like Bannon used to be, or is that what you mean?
No, I'm just talking about smart people who are the business managers or the controlling people, the 1% who are putting people out there and saying "Dance, monkey, dance."
Mm.
So,
Jennifer, any thoughts on this?
I like monkeys. I don't know. That covered like a lot of. I'm thinking about fascism a lot lately, of course, and this fear that you're talking about. And I have to acknowledge that I don't. You know, I've read Henry Miller. I don't want to be a fearful person. I want to be like bohemian and like, you know, counterculture or whatever. But I find the fear creeping in. And as a person that aspires to be well-read and looks at everything from all angles, you know, it disturbs me that this fear is there. But, I mean, look who's president, you know. So, I don't know. Like, fascism is something that we always have to fight against. Democracy is always in danger. And freedom is always in danger. And so, you know, these distractions that you're talking about. I don't know. I don't even have a smartphone. You want to see my phone? I've got a flip phone. You know, because
listen,
I can get more thinking done.
Listen, I miss a flip phone. I was having this conversation with Herrera the other night that I miss a flip phone. Like, if they would make a flip phone that was a smartphone that I could still do the stuff I'm used to doing as a tool, I'd be happy.
It's not a flip phone anymore.
Well, it's a flip phone. You could have a flip phone with a
smart screen. I find that I have internet at home. I have it at work. Why do I need it in 40 minutes between?
If I had the disposable cash, I'd get that communicator. They have a Bluetooth communicator that you can just answer the phone like what the flip phone's trying to be. It's a Bluetooth Star Trek communicator that works with your phone. Like, you can answer calls on it. You can just tell it to call people. Did you know this?
No, but I don't need all the new.
How can you
techie
not,
updates?
You not
I don't really care about any
What's
of that.
What's wrong with you?
Because I'd like to read. I like to read a book. I like to read Harper's Magazine, and all of this other stuff is, you know, constant distraction.
You mean the pablum?
The cat videos. Not that I don't like cat videos, but.
So do you think cat videos will take down society? Do you think that's? Joe watches cat videos.
I like cat videos, but you know.
Lisa watches cat videos. I know.
You don't watch cat videos.
No.
I make cat videos.
Yes, I know.
You've taken all that I've got. You've taken all that I've got. You've taken all that I've got to give. You've taken all that I've got to give.
Well, I did want to read you to read a story, Joe. There's a story that I specifically wanted you to read. Could you read it off a cell phone? Because I can't seem to get it on the iPad here.
Why can't you get it on the iPad?
You know, that's a good question.
How do we know it's real news?
Yeah, there it is.
If you can't duplicate it on another device, how do we know?
How do we know? All right, here we go, Joe. I'm going to give this to you. And this brings into question a few things.
Do you have some hand sanitizer? Talk about fear of.
You know something? Joe was here. I don't know if you can read. Do you have your glasses?
I did not bring my glasses.
Oh, my God. You'll never be able to read this.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find it here on the iPad for you.
On the iPad. Look at a man consumed by their technology. Right. I've been working on the. You'd appreciate this, Jennifer. I've been working on this thing because I've had it up to here with the ignorance and hubris of our New York commuters.
A nerve bomb.
So, for example, like, have you ever noticed that like there would be people waiting and looking at their iPhones or smartphones and they get consumed by
everywhere,
the glare waiting
everywhere.
For the thing and they walk into the side of a train.
Well, we missed our stop.
Or you missed your stop, huh? And whose fault was that?
It's Jennifer's.
No, I don't think so. She
Jennifer's fault.
But yeah, I've seen people like just like the train comes in, the doors open, and boom, they walk into the side of the train.
Really?
Or they trip and they fall
because they're looking at their phone.
Yeah, and they're not mindful of the space, kind of thing. And I'm just like, really? And then you see people who are reading a book or reading a magazine. The train pulls in, they put it down, they walk in. Not they put it down.
Well, to be fair, I have missed stops reading an actual book.
Well, if it's engaging, if it's engaging and you just it transports you to another time and place, yes, I can,
Joe,
I can accept that.
No, Joe. So. No. No, Joe. You know, when I hear this piece of music, I think of Byron. Because I made up lyrics for this.
You think Byron's listening right now?
I don't know. You know,
probably
he could
not.
Be.
He's
he
got
could
his
be.
Own show. You know.
No, he doesn't have his own show anymore. He had it for 5 years. He had his own show. He had his own podcast. Byron was ahead of the time. He had a podcast when nobody had a podcast. When nobody cared about podcasts. Byron had one. Now everybody's got a podcast. I sit in the theater and I hear these no-name critics like, oh, yeah, my podcast. I've done a podcast. Everybody's got a podcast.
You know, Joe. I've never listened to one podcast.
Well, let me just tell you something. Podcast is just radio to go. That's
exactly.
All it is.
In fact,
it's radio
NPR,
to go. They call it podcast. It's just podcast. Listen, we've been podcasting.
But it's
our
a cool word.
Listen,
it's
you
like,
go to night.
So
you go to
it,
life is like science fiction.com. We've got all our episodes. I'm going to be recasting the show as a podcast, just by the way.
You know,
just so
you know. Let's put it this way.
Recasting
what a podcast is,
as a podcast.
It's like what happened in cooking. It's like
what happened in cooking, Joe?
All of a sudden, all these cooking shows exploded and everybody became a master chef or could be on the master chef show kind of thing. That's the same thing what happened with radio because the technology became so...
But, you know, let me add to it, Joe. Add to it. It's not just technology. Go ahead.
No, because there are people out there who are, you know, better chefs than Mike.
First of all, there are not better
yes,
chefs than
there
me.
Are.
But let me just
better
say this.
Better chefs than me, too.
About the podcasting, you know what it is? It's really we are living in the on-demand generation. Where everything's on demand. You know, you can get radio on demand. You can get movies on demand. You can get your cable on demand.
And on time.
Shut up. Everything's on demand. And since everything's on demand, you know, people don't want to. It used to be you want to watch a TV show, you have to wait till it comes on. Now, they just release it and you can binge watch it and watch it whenever you want. And it's out. It's out and you get it. And that's the way we live now. That is the way we consume now. We're not beholden to when that show comes on. At that time, it used to be, oh, I got to get home to watch my show. Now it's like, okay.
Well, now we had the VHS tape so we could record
our show. Well, with the DVR and all that, that was the first step towards complete on-demand. So podcasting is just radio to go. It's just radio on-demand.
How about there are so many shows that we're so atomized, like I watch this show, but I don't know anyone else who watches this show because they're all watching. There's so many shows now.
Well, TV is better than it's ever been.
It is.
It is better. And you heard about Botchko, by the way?
Yeah, passed away.
Passed away. Steve Botchko passed away. And I played the Martin Luther King because it is going to be tomorrow is the anniversary of his unfortunate passing.
And I was watching, which I want to finish it. Tonight HBO premiered King in the Wild.
Yeah, now I was going to tell you that. I have an interview with Trey Ellis, who was an executive producer on King in the Wild. I have that to play for you. And I went to see the film. I went to see it at Riverside Church, which is featured in the film because he did a famous speech there. And I have to say it was pretty great. I saw Trey Ellis. I saw the director, the producer, one of the women who was in it. It was really, 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 really good film. I can't say enough good things about King in the Wilderness, I have to say.
I shouldn't have come. I should have stayed at home and finished watching it.
You know, MLK was the speaker at my dad's college graduation.
Stop.
Can you,
really?
Can you get a better
That's
speaker
great.
Than that?
That's great. Where's your dad?
He went to Hofstra.
Call him. Can you call him? Call him.
He's probably sleeping.
He's sleeping. Should we give out the phone number, Joe?
Were you going to call me Byron?
There's Byron, no Byron.
Joe?
That's in your mind. Byron.
Byron is here in spirit.
There you go.
Byron is always here
in
spirit.
I can't see the number, but I see the letter.
347-335-0818. Now, Joe, before I go to the interview, because I've broken up into little tiny bits of interview. Like a podcast. Hey,
waka, waka, waka.
Waka. I want to know a life lesson that you've learned. You know, besides your whole, you know, treatise on society. And I do want to hear your thoughts. Did you have anything you want to add to that, Jen, before we close?
What's that?
Just life everything lessons? Joe was saying. No, I want to hear your life lessons. But Joe was saying everything about the dumbing down of society and how we have
people have always been stupid. Let's face it.
This is true.
I mean, it takes different forms and the world's always been kind of terrible.
Different
and people
forms
have always been...
of stupidity.
Oh, yeah. Don't you
That's
think
the name
so?
Of the first album.
Actually, we're smarter now than we ever were before, but there's still a lot of dummies.
Well, we're smarter than we ever were before, but we're also dumber than we ever became because we have full access, but we only access what we already know, what we're already comfortable with believing. That's what we access, and we just reinforce what we already believe. So there's less, I think, open-mindedness now than ever before. Do you agree, Joe?
No.
Well, I want to hear Joe can disagree.
You know, having traveled a lot the last few years, you go into some of the major cities and you start to meet people who, you know, New Yorkers who are expatriates from the city and, you know, Boston and the more
if
intellectual.
You leave New York City, if you leave New York City and you move somewhere else, are you an expatriate of New York City? Is that the deal?
Yes. Well, if you were born here.
An expat. I'm a New York expat. So, like, if I move to California, I can, like, say, hey, where are you from? I'm a New York expat.
There you go.
There you go. Go ahead.
Born, bred, raised, you know. Ate the bagels.
Did you say corn fed?
Bagel fed. Bagel and pizza fed. But you meet... You find these, within the major cities, these groups of people who are intelligent, who are somewhat awake, kind of thing. What happens is when you start to move out into the suburbs, in the more rural areas, because, and a lot of them blame, you know, maybe there's a ploy that they don't want the internet. In some of those communities, they don't want the people to have access to certain things.
You mean that's why there are a lot of cities that don't have high-speed internet?
Well,
is that what you're saying?
The areas outside the cities, you know, because at that point, then they have access to certain things where they can get news and information from a broad spectrum of sources. You know,
but then they just go to Fox anyway.
Because that's cable. That's cable news. That's cable news and stuff. And they don't have the access to the larger World Wide Web to call these things into question. So maybe you know that whole thing with net neutrality and everything. Maybe it was playing into something that a larger scheme. The one percenters were percolating.
Fascinating.
Thank you for the fascinating. But you wanted to know the life lessons?
Yeah, I would like your first life lesson. No, of course, I want to hear number one. Number one, Joe's first major life lesson that you learned a long time ago that you never forgot.
I don't know. It's, you know.
Well, you said that like as if I was ignoring the fact that you were about to reveal one, and then you're like, ah.
But you put it out there and then you took it back. So.
No, I didn't take it back. Yes, I put it out there for you to contribute at any time.
Oh, at any time. I gave out the phone number. Moment.
I gave out the phone number.
Just I thought you wanted the moment.
Yeah, do you have a moment? 347-335-0818. If you have something you want to tell us about, that some life lesson that you learned at an early age that, you know, you never forgot. It changed you. 347-335-0818. You gonna give one, Joe?
When you shave, you should always put the hot water on your face first and lather up, and then use cold ice water to chill the blade so you get a smoother shave.
Really? So chilling the blade is the key.
Chilling the blade is the key.
Is this for men and women?
So, I wouldn't know because I've only done it when I've shaved
with your
my
face.
Beard.
Yes. You never shaved your legs.
I haven't shaved my legs, no.
What about your underarms?
Nope.
Let me ask you a question there, Jennifer. At what age did you start shaving your legs? What age does a young girl start shaving them? I'm just curious.
13.
13. Mm-hmm. 13.
And because then I stopped shaving in college. And I let it get really long, and I'm part Italian, so it was really hairy. But
really?
Also Irish, so the skin was white. It was quite a sight.
Ooh, and wow. You sound like Dr. Zeus there.
And this man said to me when I was in line at the pizza shop, rebelling with my long leg hair.
Rebelling like, with little, my long leg hair.
He said, "You got little anchovy legs." And that's the only time
at
I ever appreciated being harassed because it was so funny.
That
so
is
I was like,
funny.
He's right. My legs look like anchovies.
That's kind of funny. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Lewis.
Lewis?
Brooklyn.
For Brooklyn. Lewis, what do you want to share that you learned that you know, a life lesson?
I can share a couple of things, but I guess I'll tell you this one when I was a kid in junior high school. I was playing hooky, you know, like most kids do, you know, in school time.
Most kids did not do that, sir. You did it. No.
I guess. Maybe
it's a
rite
of passage. Everybody does it once.
I always felt like everybody in the hood, you know,
people I know did it. I'm busting your chops, sir.
Okay, yeah, because it was in the 70s. So I'm thinking, you know, it was a
natural
thing to do.
Exactly, of course. Listen, it's like eat, breathe, sleep, cut school.
Okay. I thought you was like, you know, like nobody did it.
All right, go ahead.
So I'm playing hooky, you know, with my friends. And, you know, I've done this a few times already. And I get caught, you know. Highland Park is not far from the school. That's the park we...
You get caught by what? The police? The police?
Yeah, of course.
Your parents?
Yeah, police. So police, you know, chased us, grabbed us. So, you know, normally when you're a kid, you know, you have all this respect for police. You want to be a policeman, a fireman. So I didn't want to run, you know, because, you know, when they call you, you know, you stop. It's like when they question you, you're thinking that they're based on truth. You know, the oath they take and whatever, you just look at them as authority figures and that they're honest and they're good guys, right? That's how you look at them when you're kids. At least that's, you know. I grew up as a kid.
You obviously
anyway,
grew up, you know. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Shielded.
So, as you know, the cop grabs me. You know, I come with him, but to my surprise, first thing he does, as he's grabbing me, he slaps me. You know, I mean, I believe I was maybe, I don't know, 11. Whatever, seventh grader, you know. I don't think I was in eighth grade. Yeah, seventh or sixth. I think it was in seventh grade. Anyway, no, he slapped me and just shocked me. You know, like caught me really bad because I'm thinking a cop is not supposed to hit you in none of these things. You know, and then he just grabbed me like if he was my father. You know, or worse, just yanked you by the shirt, by the, you know, the back of the shirt where they grab you and just lift you up.
Yes.
Put you in the car, bring you to the school, and you know, me telling the people that you know, this cop. You know, hit me. It's like, well, my point is that, you know, one of the things I learned as a kid was growing up and I grew up in the ghetto, always worried about gangs because they were all over. But it seemed to me like the enemy was the guys in blue.
So you learned that a cop will slap you?
Not just slap me. I mean, that's why I said I have a few stories to tell you.
Ah, okay. As you got older, the stories got a little more intense.
Really bad. Really bad, man. I could have been one of those guys you hear on the news, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I hear you. I hear you. And you, did you grow up in the South Bronx?
Brooklyn, remember?
Brooklyn. Oh, Brooklyn.
The East.
Eastbrook. Oh, shoot. Yeah, all right.
Do you still feel a little cautious or frightened around police officers?
Well, I have that, but I grew up in the streets. I mean, I've been here all my life, so frightening is something that already ran out of me. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's good.
Not to say that I don't have no fear. Don't get me wrong. You know what I'm saying? But I've had so many arguments.
You're not Daredevil.
Say again? I'm not what?
Daredevil, the man without fear.
Nah, of course not. Like I said, fear is good. You know, you need fear. You know, to make you make decisions with.
No, I concur. If you're not afraid of nothing, yeah. Then, you know.
I mean, if you could have that, and don't get me wrong, I've seen people that come close to that. The guys I grew up with. You know, I've seen one of my best friends take guns from people because he just. I don't know. It is amazing to me because I was like, wow, how did, you know, this guy is like, shoot me, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, so, yeah, like I said, I have fear, but, like, for example, I've had so many lawsuits for cops arresting me for no reason. You know, at least 7 lawsuits. You know, I have my jaw broken, beaten by 6 cops.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Of course, this was after, you know, the slap.
Yeah, I would say this is a post-slap experience.
Yeah.
Wow.
When I was a kid. But, right. You know, like I said, I learned, you know, that police is really the bad guys compared to... Because I expect things from the street. I never expected things from the guys that are supposed to be the good guys. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, here's something. I read something about that recently because, you know, I've definitely, of course, had friends who became cops and whatnot. I think part of the problem is... fear. You know, if a cop says, you know, and there's two things, fear and hatred. Those are the two biggest enemies to, in my opinion, to a non-biased police force.
You know, right.
Fear and hatred. And if you're filled with one or the other or a combo, you know,
yeah.
Innocent people will get hurt or die. And, you know, part of it has to be, overall, you know, Joe's heard me say this, I just think that our entire concept of what it is to be a policeman, be a cop, has to be re-looked at. And I think it has to include, you know, ongoing therapy. Because I think, you know, if you know, we don't take for care of our veterans, but I mean, you know, there's no way you can't develop an us and them feeling if you're a policeman, considering what you're
doing. I agree.
Doing.
I mean, part of the reason, like, yeah, no way. I definitely think you're right. And one of the things I did, you know, as growing up, I went to law school. I went to where most cops go, John Jay College, to learn the law. Because I worked for an attorney for some time. So I said, you know what? Let me get some education, learn these things. You know, they arrested me the way they want. So it was a way for me not just to challenge them, but for me to know things about, you know, the system, the court system, the jail system, the, you know, the judges and, you know, everything. So I saw from all angles, you know, the perspective of what the system is like and what cops go through. And how they are, because I have friends that are cops, or at least half friends. I don't see them as much anymore, but.
Well.
They need a lot of help.
Yeah, I concur. Now, question. How long, now what made you call in? Like, how long have you been listening to the show?
Wow, you guys?
Yeah.
Listen to everything in WBAI. I mean, you guys have everything, you know what I'm saying? A little bit of everything.
That's true.
You got the music, you know, DGM. And they got the other guys that play the classical music. You know, you guys, they have it all. You guys have it all. There's no more to say. You know what I'm saying? Whoever doesn't listen to WBAI for political things and everything that they have to offer, they, I don't know, they're missing out. They're not in this world. That's my point, you know, my opinion.
Listen, you know, we're going to have you come in and do a cart. And what's your name? Lewis from the Bronx? I mean, Lewis from Brooklyn?
After such a ringing endorsement, you should give the number for the pledge line.
I'm going to give them the other for the pledge line, right? That's right. You should pledge. You love us. All right, but I appreciate you calling.
I do. Believe me.
I'm glad.
And I'm going to keep doing it.
All right. Listen.
You guys keep doing what you do, man.
Thank you. one of the things about science fiction and horror, besides it being a genre, is it's one of those things where people have a tendency to kind of put it in a box immediately.
Right.
You know. Yeah. So, and if you're blending genres, you know, people, what kind of movie is it?
Right.
You know, to me, it's a Twilight Zone. Straight up what it is.
Yeah.
How did you see it? Did you see it as a genre film? Did you see it as a family film? Did you see it as a end of the world film?
Yeah.
How did you see it?
Well, I think it really comes back to our favorite films that are in the genre of like sci-fi or horror. Those are always the blend. So it was never about one or the other. It was always, it has to be a combination of both. Because you can deliver just a horror film and maybe that'll scare some people, but you'll forget about it. Like, it's not going to have any emotional impact. And then you can do the family drama, but is that really going to get people engaged in wanting to see this movie? So it always had to be the marriage of both. That's where we feel like the cinematic magic happens.
All right, well, let me ask you more of a process question
here
now, because I know sometimes you can get so close to an idea that it's not until somebody comes along and says, why does the character do that? And you go, oh, my God. You know, like, that's been sitting there. You didn't see it.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, you know, you got somebody like Michael Bay to produce it, so he obviously saw it.
Yeah.
And then you got John Krasinski not only to direct it, but be in it
and
help, you know, massage the screenplay. So I'm curious what he brought to it that maybe you might not have thought of. My guess is looking at him, he brought a certain amount of humanity and comedy to it. But I'm curious what he did bring or how it opened it up for
you. Yeah, I mean, you know, John coming on as a director, like, he's now tasked with figuring out what exactly does this look visually. So, you know, elements, thinking through the process of how does this family live, like the sand pass, those were very much, you know, the elements that he was able to put into action to really ground the reality of their day-to-day existence.
Yeah, and I think he, like any good director, when he came on, I think he just looked at the script through the prism of his own life experience and said, how can I make this slightly more personal to what I know? I know that he had just had a kid at the time of reading the script, and so I think he was just putting, you know, just peppering in a little bit of detail in terms of his own personal experience and how that kind of interacted with the story we had written.
One thing that was really cool, though, to see in that process bringing the film to life was the casting of Millicent Simmons, who there was always the character who is deaf, but to be able to cast somebody that has that actual life experience is going to inform the film so much more than if you cast, you know, just somebody else that is playing a deaf character. So that was certainly an aspect that we love seeing come to life, because you know, you don't usually get to see all these different sides of life in film, and so we're really proud of that and what John has done. So.
Well, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you something else, too. You know, again, having been a filmmaker as well, there's sometimes where, you know, you think it'll work. You know,
totally.
But then when it does, when it completely does, you know, like there are moments, you know, in the screening I went to where, like, wow, everything completely worked to me.
Cool.
Even because, to me, you know, a film's got you when everybody's quiet. You don't even hear chewing, you know, and then they laugh. It, like, there's only a little bit of humor in there, but they laugh because there's that release that horror and comedy hopefully work together. Yeah. So I'm curious, going through this, and again, I like to ask this question of artists. I feel that as you define your art defines you. What did you learn about yourselves, maybe, and writing in general from this process?
I know, like, when we were writing the script, I was not a father at the time, and 3 months ago, I became a dad for the first time.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so in the process, I think I realized the weight of trying to protect your child. Because back then, that was just a concept. You know, we could theorize what it's like to be a parent, but to actually become a parent, it becomes so much more. And that's something that I think we're, as the film starts to trickle out, we're starting to see people react to that, that instinctual fear of not being able to protect your child. So I've certainly learned I'm a very fearful person now. So.
And I hesitate to answer this question. This is one of the most substantive questions we've been asked, so thank you for that.
Okay.
And apologies in advance if this is not a good answer, but I think, you know, what I learned through writing the script and making the movie is just how important it is that what we say to each other, you know, and the movie's just as much about what we don't say as what we do say, and how important communication amongst the family that's been through a tragedy is, and how communication can really bring us together and heal us. So,
well, you know, I'll tell you one of the things that I liked about this movie, again, as a film lover, as a film critic, as a filmmaker, is there are lots of movies where the great special effects, it's a good concept, whatever, whatever, but I sit there going, I do not understand why this character did this.
Right.
And that is what I would call emotional intent. I understood everybody's emotional intent.
Oh, great, cool.
And that, to me, is sort of like the secret sauce. Like, that's how you care about characters, because you understand them emotionally. And that, I thought, was very strong. And I'm just wondering, is that you guys, well, we're just that good, or was that something that you struggled with, or
right. I mean, we, like, in the process, we take more time rather than less time. Like, we're always too precious with material. And so we're trying to second guess, like, every single decision along the step of the way, including, like, character's intent. We want to make sure that it all is tracking, that it's all arcing to some sort of meaning, and that it's not ever betraying the story. Because you're right, like, you can easily be taken out of a movie by one small mistake in terms of the believability of a character. So,
anybody here?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So you get the only a total jacket gets. But so I'm curious about how you two work together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who's got the strength, who's got the weakness, who's better at the scripture, who's better with the dialogue.
Yeah.
How do you guys break up the work, and, you know, what's the yin and yang?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So there's no division in terms of talent. There's not, one of us isn't better at dialogue or structure or anything. We do everything 50-50. But what we get out of collaborating is challenging each other. We always, we're very good about trying to bring out the best in each other's work. And I know many times Scott will send me a scene that he's been working on, and I'll do my best to kind of elevate it, and I'll send it back to him, and he'll do his best to elevate that even further. And we just kind of send our work back and forth to each other and continuously challenge each other. And the other cool thing about having a partnership is that it's very easy as writers. Sometimes you write a scene, you think, oh, this is so good. It's easy to get precious over your own work sometimes. But you never feel precious when somebody else's hands are a part of the collaboration. And so I think it's just a little bit easier for us to objectively look at our writing and go, oh, this scene's just really not working, or this ending is not as emotionally satisfying as we had hoped. Let's take another look at it and keep working it.
Yeah, hopefully, like, the marriage of, you know, our ideas usually is better than, like, you know, if Brian was just writing a script or I was just writing a script, that we're always trying to distill to the simplest and best idea possible.
Well, I definitely, you know, having collaborated, I think, you know, checking your ego at the door, and, like, you said, just being open, like, what's the best idea? Because he can give you an idea and go, you know, that's a piece of but that gave me a better idea.
Yeah.
You know? And then if you can't convince each other, then...
Yeah.
Totally, and honestly, that's one of the beautiful things about filmmaking in general, is it's all collaborative, whether it's the director, the actors, the producers, everyone's just trying to make the best movie possible, and it really shouldn't be about ego, it's just best idea wins, and certainly Quiet Place was that experience for us.
From this experience, and seeing something that, you know, that's been in a drawer for so long,
that,
you know, you wanted to, and you were going to do if you had to, and then working with somebody who, I would never think that this is a, you know, John Chris.
Sure,
yeah.
You know, but he's also Jack Ryan. And I would like,
such a departure.
So it's such a departure. So he's clearly an interesting guy. What did you learn maybe about what you guys might want to tackle next?
Oh, wow.
No, that's a great question. I mean, I think one thing that we want to maintain as much as possible as writers and also as directors is just originality. Like, I think there's such a groundswell for original ideas, and we're inundated all the time too with so many things that are based on other existing properties or superhero movies, and for us it's just about finding new stories to tell. So I think that's like the focus, and one of the things that's been nice about Quiet Place, at least in its early release, finding an audience, is that it just confirms that people are ready for more stories like this.
And something different.
Yeah.
And then I guess my question might be for people who are, you know, aspiring. Mm-hmm. What do you tell young aspiring filmmakers, writers?
Totally. I think, you know, chase the weird kind of crazy ideas that you love.
Weird,
t-shirt. You know. it's everyone has their own kind of personal story. Everyone came from a specific place that makes them unique, and you know, finding that and kind of latching onto that and exploring that, I think, is usually a great well for writers to turn to and make something cool.
Yeah, and I also would add to that, like, just making your own opportunities. You know, coming from Iowa, like, we had no inroads to Hollywood whatsoever, and we couldn't be further away. And what we found is just making your own movies in your own backyard is a great way to I don't know, just tell stories, and then you can show those to your friends, and they get some response, and then hopefully use that information and things you've learned into the next movie and just build from there. So always just, you know, create. So,
okay. Yeah. All right. Now the fun question is, you talked about the kind of filmmaking you like, which I love, where I call it like you dig a hole, and then throughout the movie you fill it, is what you do in this. Top three films
of all time.
That no matter when it's on, you'll stop and you'll look at it.
Oh my gosh,
That is such a hard question. Okay, I'll start with the first one, After Hours. Like being here in Soho, like I'm like, where did they shoot that? Was it around the corner? No, After Hours is such an incredible film in terms of just starting the movie off, and then you never let the audience breathe until the final frame of the film.
And you have no idea where it's going to go.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's such a fun ride. I'll add to that, this is maybe a kind of a more conventional choice, but Hitchcock's Vertigo, I love. It's beautifully made. It's personal, clearly. Like, this is the man who knows a lot about obsession, and that whole film is about obsession. And it's just groundbreaking. And just, like, I love how it kind of just unfolds. You don't know where that thing's going.
And to that, I would add Hitchcock's The Birds, which I feel like is similar to Quiet Place, in that every time you're outside and you're a flock of birds, you got to stay silent or else they're coming after you. But that film is wonderful, how it just starts off as a character piece and then devolves into this terrifying suspense film. And then I would say my other film that I always go to is complete departure from genre, but it's Alexander Payne's About Schmidt, where it's about this guy who's just reflecting on his life and the meaning of that. And that's one of those character things that I'm like, what is the purpose of, like, humanity? So it gets really heady sometimes when I put that on, but I always continue watching it.
And then,
you got two more.
Okay, I got two more. So here's another one. Here's one of my all-time favorite movies. It's one of the movies that inspired me to be a filmmaker is M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable. It's kind of cool to like that movie now, but at the time, I saw it four times in theaters, and my friends were not having it. They were just not into that movie. But again, beautifully articulated, visually, all these amazing oneers, groundbreaking oneers, and amazing performances from Bruce Willis, Sam Jackson, excellent story. And I don't know, I'll go obscure for my final one. I'll say Jacques Tati's Playtime, which is a silent film of sorts, but it's just unlike anything I've ever seen before. I would love to figure out what the modern day equivalent is to that film, but that film is just a movie you observe, you just watch, and it's all about what is not happening in the story. It's all about what's happening in the corners of the frame, and it's all about the audience participating and seeing things that they have never seen before, or the surreal magic of everyday life. Anyways, a beautiful film.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, that's very instructive now. Got a complete psychological profile. But no, I think, again, the last thing I'll say on Quiet Place is what I like is similar to what you're mentioning in Unbreakable, set up. Set up, and you don't know you're being set up.
Mm. Right.
But then it pays off.
Mm. So, really. Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You have given me a... Ooh, wow, that was loud. You've given me this news story to read. First of all, we must point out the fox. We must point out the facts.
Did you say the fox?
The fox. That Fox News
we
is...
must point out the fox. That's
Fox News is involved with this. And when you say Fox News and you involve Donald Trump...
Exactly.
It's all BS and it's bad for you.
Well, you know, so, I'm on Fox, okay?
But we now know, thanks to our enlightened sense of Russian involvement.
Now, but the thing is, you got to read some of the details of this story. That's where it gets really life is like science fiction.
Russian bots are tweeting their support of embattled Fox News host Laura Ingraham. First of all, I have seen this person and
Russian bots.
So,
Russian bots. Like we.
I can't hear you.
You can hear me.
Now you put up your microphone.
No, but I didn't want to
interrupt
you.
You need a microphone, bot, Mike.
I didn't want to interrupt you. I'm just saying that we, you know, these are the kind of stories that we have now.
This is the world that we created.
That was the kind of world we
created. And is it just me or
it's just you.
No. The nice young youth.
The nice young youth.
Who has been part of this whole Parkland.
Hogg.
David Hogg. He's aging so quickly because of the bitter cynicism that he's getting from the adults of America. It's just like, I feel sorry for the kid. They're sucking the youth out of him.
Just like Arnold Schwarzenegger did to Maria Shriver.
He's like aging. Like I've seen him on all the talk shows and everything. And
he's
like, what are these adults thinking? Are they insane? He's like Charlton Heston in Planet of the Apes. It's a madhouse. It's a madhouse.
Listen, we're living in insane. We're living in a Chinese curse. You remember that Chinese curse?
May you live in interesting times.
Yes, we're living the Chinese curse. Go ahead.
Kudos. So, embodied Fox host Laura Ingraham has found some unlikely allies, Russian bots. You know, when I said that, I thought of WALL-E and the little robot that keeps coming around and cleaning up all the older robots with the contamination kind of thing. That's funny.
Where you're not from
WALL-E. Russian linked Twitter accounts. Now it's on Twitter. The Russian bots have spread from Facebook to Twitter. Oh my God. And Semantic doesn't have anything to stop that.
Do you think they're Russian in the Yahoo comments section as well?
Probably. I would say most definitely. So Russian-linked Twitter accounts have rallied around the conservative talk show host who has come under fire for attacking the young survivors of Parkland, Florida school shooting. Can I say something?
Yeah.
She has not come under fire, because if she came under fire the same way the Parkland High School did, we could all breathe a sigh of relief. She might be dead.
Stop now, but Joe, come on now, be nice.
Listen, Ricky Gervais taught me a life lesson.
What's that?
Ricky, a joke is all about the context.
Okay.
I wasn't saying I was making a joke based on flipping.
Yeah, but
I can say that.
That's what Kathy Griffith said.
And,
but I have to say one good thing about her. She has some adopted children. She does have a heart in there somewhere.
No, it's not.
Okay, take it back.
It's bought for by Fox News.
Stop. Fox pays for her children.
There you go.
Details at 11.
According to the website Hamilton 68, does Lin-Manuel Miranda have anything to do with
that?
No, it's Hamilton. That's why.
I know.
Which tracks the spread of Russian propaganda on Twitter. Let me phrase that.
So there's
properly.
A site.
Russian propaganda on Twitter.
Yes.
The hashtag.
Think about that for a second. Let that sink in.
There you go.
It's a site that tracks Russian propaganda.
There you go.
On Twitter.
Hashtag I stand with Laura jumped. This is a percentage. It's not an amount.
Yep.
So take this into consideration. 2,800% in 48 hours this weekend.
2,800%.
Percent.
In 48
hours.
It's
a multiple. It's not a number. It's a multiple.
Can I just say I have a lovely but clueless aunt that defended Laura Ingraham over this?
Listen, my ex, and I have a very lovely daughter.
Wait. How does she defend it? Like, what was...
That this kid is just using the spotlight to his advantage. Oh, like every Fox commentator doesn't do that too?
And they're getting paid for it.
Yeah, at least his
What about
cause...
Sinclair? What's her thoughts on Sinclair? Again, please, John.
The website botcheck.me, which tracks 1,500 political propaganda bots.
So there are 1,500 political propaganda bots, basically, is what they're saying.
No.
This website tracks that many. Didn't let me finish the statement. Took it out of context. Fake news. Let me read you the whole sentence so you can then comment.
Please.
The website botcheck.me, which tracks 1,500 political propaganda bots, found that at
bats or bots
found that Ingram Mangle, comma, at David Hogg 111. Yeah, it was like Ingram Mangle.
Joseph Mangala.
It's Mangle.
Really?
Yeah, look, Ingram Mangle.
Oh, Mangle, not
Mangala. No, okay. And at Fox News were among the top 6 Twitter handles tweeted by Russia-linked accounts this weekend. David Hogg and Laura Ingram were the top 2 word phrases being shared. Wading into the controversy is a key Russian propaganda bot which seized on divisive issues online to sow discord in the United States.
Sow discord in the United States. Now, let's let that sink in for a second. So these Russian bots, there is an agenda. It's not like they don't just exist for nothing. So what is the agenda?
They want us at each other's throats.
Exactly.
But why?
Fear. Exactly. Hello. It's as basic as it gets. Divide and conquer.
Same as it ever was.
Go ahead.
Same as it ever was.
Same as it ever was. There it is.
Wading into controversy is a key strategy for Russian propaganda bots, which seized on divisive issues online to sow discord in the United States. Since February 14th, Parkland shooting, which claimed 17 lives, Russian bots have flooded Twitter with false information about the massacre. Researchers who follow the issue found that in the days after the shooting, hashtag Parkland, hashtag gun control now, hashtag Florida and hashtag gun control were among the top hashtags used by Russian linked accounts. Previously, these
hashtag Joe's in this.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Let me just phrase something. Back in the day, before we started using hashtags and Twitter came along, the logarithms would look for keywords that were being
That's
used.
That's what a logarithm does.
Right, but before we had the hashtags. So here's the difference. If we have a bot that is hashtagging will turn around and propagate itself in a different way than somebody if you're searching for a keyword within a news story. So if you use a word within a news story, you'll get a more diversified spread as opposed to a bot that's using a hashtag that's being more targeted.
Well, that's the whole point. The whole point but it's also, you have to take it to context. Talk about context. How do people use hashtags?
Right.
How has hashtags worked its way into...
But that's a laziness thing.
But it is. It's worked its way into conversation. If yes. I'm going to say to you, hey, I had a drink at Joe's Pub last night, saw this cute girl. It's like, hashtag Joe's Pub, hashtag cute girl at bar, hashtag... You know, you don't even speak in a sentence.
And you know, regardless of...
And keep in mind, you pick the hashtag that's got the most...
Right.
People buzz. Saying that.
Buzz. Right, well, exactly.
Buzz, which still doesn't...
So, and let me just say this. Regardless of the fact that we're sitting at WBAI...
We're sitting in... And you're listening to Night Shift.
Yeah, on 99.5 FM.
Somebody had called and I had them down... They have to call back.
Right.
What's the phone number here?
I don't know.
347-335.
I'm wearing
0818. You can tell us what you've learned.
There you go. But here's the whole thing. It's like, are we that gullible? And are we that stupid? The early stuff that was coming out of, you know, I have to tell you.
Did you say yup, Jennifer?
All right. So We grew up with guns in the house.
Okay.
Okay, my father had the top of the line gun.
We grew up, this is like the opening scene.
Yeah, we grew up with guns. My father had a shotgun, we had a .22. Anything we ever shot, he would go out hunting once a year. I went shooting. I don't know if my brother
was. Did he hunt black people? Medicine? Was he hunting?
I do. In fact.
Of course you did.
Palm Sunday, we were at a very good restaurant.
And you killed something.
No, in Forest Hills called Alberto's. And on the menu, they had venison.
You had it?
And I had the venison.
Wow.
It was very good.
You ate venison yesterday, is what you're telling me.
No, a week ago.
Oh, a week ago.
Oh, yes. Not on Easter.
No, it was.
Why don't you eat venison on Easter? Oh, you ate venison on Palm Sunday.
Did you have a ham on Easter?
Did you have a palm?
I had ham, I had lamb, and I had a roast.
Was it palm-baked venison?
No. And had my mother been still alive because she was liked it, we would have had rabbit. So the Easter
rabbit.
Do people eat rabbit on Easter? Like, isn't that?
Yes, we saw a rabbit in my parents' yard yesterday, yes. Which is a big deal for me.
Now, where do your parents live?
On Long Island. We call it the miracle bunny.
The miracle bunny.
Because sometimes you're depressed and you're at my parents, and then you look out in the yard and you see a bunny, and it's like, and we call it the miracle bunny.
I have a good friend of mine who's a poet laureate who lives out in East Hampton. And we've stayed at her house kind of thing. And we were there for October for the Hamptons Film Festival. And these wild turkeys came walking across the green.
Awesome.
And my girlfriend had to grab me because I was like, Thanksgiving dinner, free!
Wild turkey was the first thing I ever drank.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
There you go. But these were the real wild turkeys. They had leather jackets on.
Were they wild?
They said the East Hampton Wild Turkey
Wild
Gang.
Wild Turkey Gang, right.
Exactly. There you go.
Club. It was a motor club.
It was claw feet like this.
Kind of exactly. Cross-clawed feet.
There you go.
Can you say that five times there fast?
Cross-clawed feet.
Can you say it, Jennifer?
No, but that's someone's family crest.
That's right.
Jonathan. Oh, and did you see how they photoshopped this image?
No.
On one of the alt news sites, they opened up his hand, so they turned it into a Nazi salute.
No.
Stop.
Did they? Give him devil horns?
No. But they did, you know. Look, you know what?
Did you see what they did?
I was an activist in high school.
With the Latina? Did you see how they like superimposed, like they put a different sign in her hand?
They also focused on her Cuba flag. She's a communist.
Right, and they put like dark circles under her eyes. Yeah.
It's just like.
Was your head shaved before the shooting?
I think so.
You know, and I have to give him credit because.
Today's lesbian.
You need to. Okay, so in one of the very first Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
I like how you can throw anything back to
Horror. No, because Laura is trying to figure out a way to defeat the Freddy Krueger character. In one of the Indian books of philosophy.
Laura Ingraham?
No. But her name was Laura, and that's kind of interesting.
Laura Ingraham is trying to fight Freddy.
So she
who is now called David.
And she had read this Indian book on philosophy and nightmares and stuff. And one of the things is if you have a nightmare and you want to take away its power, turn your back on it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. My father taught me something different.
Well, anyway. So, you know, it's like I look at the way these kids are. And at one point there was one group that like actually turned their back on like the White House and stuff nightmare. And went out and was taking the power away from them. And
Wait. A group? What do you mean a group?
When they were protesting.
So they would go in front of the White House and turn their backs to the White House.
At one point they did something and they turned their back. They had their backs to the White
really?
House.
Really? Interesting.
And
whether to get a selfie.
Well, but even so, if you think about the...
get a selfie.
Even if they didn't get a selfie. The whole idea of what lies in our subconscious kind of
and
thing.
And what we can draw through our
right,
backs.
Right, because I have to give it to them that, you know, and even the way you look at David Hogan, how he's like changed over the last... few weeks.
Let me ask you a question. If I turn my back to you, will you disappear?
I have too much girth to be dissipated by your lack of interest.
I understand.
There you go. However, there are several other tricks that I know to turn away and usurp your power.
Thank you.
Such as gastroenteral...
I know nothing of these matters.
There you go. So there you go. But... anyway, there we are. But you know what? This whole stupidness about
this whole stupidness.
It is stupid. Why do you pick on a kid and say, oh, he didn't get...
Because you know, it's irresponsible.
An adult should be held more accountable than kids.
Let's not even get into accountability.
So,
because we don't live in a society of accountability. The thing is...
Listen,
you know,
I'm going to say something right now.
Uh-oh, say it.
And so, I think God has not allowed me to win the lottery.
Ah.
Because one of the...
You and many other of your brethren.
No, because one of the things I would do, and I've admitted this to other people before, so I feel comfortable saying it on air, that I would create a fund. Like, let's say I won the $512 million jackpot and I got $400 million.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we'd still be friends, right?
Right. I would take $10 million and I would put it...
Give it to Mike Sarge.
And I would put it in an account... And basically, I would say that there are certain people with political views that are totally jaw-dropping that we should basically put bounties on their heads.
Oh. Stop. You start a bounty fund.
Yes.
About the Joe Missouri bounty fund. That's a graphic novel right there.
There you go. Because you know what? At the end of the day, it's like, how can you sit there and listen to this in this day and age? First of all, if there's anybody south of the border who has certain white linen outfits in their closet, I mean,
yeah.
How can we condone people going into certain areas and expressing certain political views that are basically, let me just put it this way, they're very anti-human.
Yeah.
Okay?
And how they ran that woman over.
Yes. And so therefore...
Oh, yeah, during the protest.
Yes.
Ran the woman, police car.
So,
ran the woman
so...
Over.
Was it a police car?
As
yes!
The I first thought it was thing, a white
wait,
supremacist.
Wait, so the first thing I would do is... Mike, this is the
plan. Talking about what happened a week ago, right?
Listen, no, this is where you can't. A white guy holding a tiki thing is not a good thing anymore.
No, when was the white guy holding a tiki?
But here's the thing. So the first thing I would do, I've thought this whole.
I have a friend though. I have a friend who calls them tiki torch Nazis.
Yes,
I think it's a great.
The tiki torch is a substitute for the penis. You
think so?
Penis.
Like holding your penis up into the sky and on flames.
We create a fund. Okay, we put the $10 million in the fund.
The flaming.
And then we take an additional $2 million, and in the name of the fund, we donate it to the NRA. And basically turn around and say, you, the NRA, have the power to stop this.
Do they?
No. When I turn around and say there's a bounty on the head of certain people kind of thing, you have $2 million, here's the fund.
This sounds illegal.
Like a graphic novel.
So, and we give the power. Oh, I talked to a lawyer about this.
If you took that money and you gave it to some of these jerks to get them a college education, they might change their mind.
But here's the thing. The money under the fund that I set up has to be dispersed through the NRA. So if you
so do, NRA literally
I have better
has to
ideas
pay people,
for your $500 million.
This is only 12 of the 500. Just so you know.
Oh yeah.
12 of the 500. This is what he's going to do for.
We're going to have this United White Supremacist College Fund. We're going to send these Nazis to very like liberal colleges
in Ethiopia.
They'll learn
in Ethiopia. They have to be exchange students.
They'll get, you know, they'll
Botswana.
Take
you know what,
a class in African American history.
He would praise me.
It could happen.
Sure, God.
You know what I read in the New Yorker?
I feel like I have greasy eyeballs.
You do have greasy eyeballs.
This old white guy.
Yeah.
Called into this radio program with a black host.
How many stories start like that?
It was a woman host, though. It wasn't you.
I could tell you stories.
And he said, you know, I'm afraid that I might be a racist. And she listened, and she said, well, what I want you to do... I think he was lonely. He didn't have... His wife died or something. He didn't have a family. And she said, I want you to read books on African American history. And she named some books, and he went out and he bought them. And he read the books, and he said, I had no idea. I had no idea what people had to deal with. And they became friends.
It changed
he would call her every once in a while. And this is what people need.
Now, what show is this?
I don't know, but it was an article in the New Yorker. Okay. And I forget what her name is. I cut it out. And so this is me as a librarian feels that books can change people. And that's what I have learned, because you didn't ask me what my life lesson was.
What's your life lesson?
My life lesson is that no matter how good TV is, the golden age of TV, I like Tosh.0, I like Eric Andre, all these things are great, but there's nothing like a book. The books, reading, trumps, if I may, television. Television is the idiot box, and reading is enlightening.
Well, if television is the idiot box, what's the internet?
Well, you could read articles on the internet. You could read things that
you
would
could
normally
also read
be in print.
Fake news on the internet.
You could read fake news, but I do think that reading, there's something
you could
about
see doctored
reading
photos on the
that internet is superior to television. And
yeah, but hasn't reading been
not,
subverted?
Not that I don't watch TV.
Hasn't reading been subverted by the internet?
Well, you know, in the library, you still have people coming in like...
From a periodical point of view, the internet has usurped...
Got a periodical right here.
No, but you know what? and I, as someone who's fond of reading and mm-hmm. has read many books and articles and journals, I mean, my grandfather, when I was going to high school, he would drop me off at the train station every day, and he would give me money to go to the newsstand. And he would make me buy the New York Times, the Daily News, and buy him a copy, and that's why I would read that. In fact, on Sunday, one of the things we would do is we would go through the New York Times, kind of thing. So
fake news.
Yeah, exactly.
Great fake news, though. Such well written.
And in high school and college, I worked in the library. So
in theology school.
No, I didn't. I went to St. John's Pharmacy School.
Oh.
I had a problem with the theology department. So that's another story. But, you know, you get a sense for good journalism. And even now, for me, you know, we're on the go society kind of thing.
So wait, are you saying you could have been a theological pharmacist?
Without theology, you need pharmacology.
There you go.
To fill that void
is,
that God once was...
Without theology,
but,
you
know,
need pharmacology.
I like the programming and the information that I get from WNYC and NPR every day. It supplements the...
What's radio? What do you consider radio to be?
That is a good question. It's funny, okay, when he said that, yes. I just was like, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, but, no, you spoke very vehemently.
No, because... When I think back of the articles that I read, especially in the New York Times back in the 70s and the 80s, those stories that I hear today are an encapsulation of the first couple of paragraphs in the byline of what I would read in those periodicals. And I have to say, too, that there's no fluff kind of thing. You know,
in what, the New York Times?
There's no Real Housewives in the New York Times,
or on,
although
NPR,
they do write books,
or on WNYC
or WBAI.
You know, they have some fun articles and stuff on occasion.
Say it, or WBAI.
Thank you. BAI is a little bit more hard edge New York. It's like picking up the New York, the Daily News. The BAI is the Daily News. New York Times is a more world.
I don't know if that's good.
Why? Well, back in the day.
Well, we're like the Guardian.
Back in the day, when I was, like, we're talking like the 70s and the 80s. When they were, the New York, the Daily News had a higher
standard. The 1670s?
No, Mike.
Back when you were young?
No, Mike. But
go down to the beach, watch the Pilgrims Land?
You confuse me with your father.
Yeah,
no,
go ahead.
He was a pilgrim.
You just get more, We're living in a democracy, supposedly.
Are we?
Well,
I remember. Do you remember when people used to say we're living in a post-racial society? You remember that BS? I remember that.
But here's the thing that I've said before, and that I've never.
Whenever you say like you've said something before, like Byron. Just
when I was growing up as a kid, and even today, there was.
Is this insinuating that you have grown up?
More than some people in the room. When we thought about the President of the United States, there was always a sense that whether we didn't agree with their views or not, it's like there was somebody home in the house. And now it just seems like the light's on, but there's nobody home.
Well, I hear he's walking around in his pajamas, eating cheeseburgers, watching you know, Fox and Friends and drinking Diet Coke and
just really not doing much at all.
That's really obviously not what he's doing.
It is because he's
come on, you can't go so far left that you lose reality.
No, that's not true. They say he really does just have the TV on like 12 hours a day, which my mother defended as a very liberal person. She's like, well, I always have the TV on in the background.
A lot of
people. I'm like, you're not running the free world. You're, you know, sorting craft supplies.
That's why he won. That's why he won. Listen to me.
My sister does it.
Your sister
what?
Well,
he's deregulating everything, making the world more unsafe.
Oh, that whole
while
thing
he
today.
Listens, while he eats cheeseburgers.
With the EPA rolling back the emission stuff.
What's the point of the EPA if it does things like that? What is the actual
point? It's now like an Orwellian...
Where's the protection part of EPA?
It's like Orwell now.
And by the by, recently, because of the popularity of the sale of the book after he took office, Amazon Prime dropped...
Fire and Fury?
1984, the Richard Burton John Hurt.
Yeah.
And I watched that again because I remember how powerful
that
was.
What do you mean they dropped it?
The book is better.
They put the movie on.
Like 1984 sudden, became a bestseller again because of Trump.
Yeah, that I know.
So.
Okay. Well.
It's just like, but you want to know what I was laughing at the other day? Because this whole thing about him switching the cabinets and stuff and all the people. There's a Mel Brooks movie, a very obscure Mel Brooks movie called The 12 Chairs. And the whole thing.
Yes, I've seen it.
Yes, and the whole thing is I've seen it again recently.
Frank. What's his name? He played Dracula.
Langella.
Frank Langella, thank you.
And the whole thing is like, a beautiful thing. You know, the Russian. My head is spinning. Before Stalin and everything, the czars and everything had fallen. And there's a chair where his mother hid all the jewelry and stuff. Mm-hmm. So they're looking for the jewels, and the whole thing is that they're going through the
I remember
the new Russian representatives and stuff, and it seems like there's a scene where like at one point they go, well, you have to talk to the cabinet the minister of such and such. Where is he? He's out in the yard. They're about to shoot him, kind of thing. And it's like, it's so funny because it was like, it's so Trump kind of thing.
Well, listen, Russia's doing that. You heard they poisoned those two agents in England.
Yes, yes.
That's some straight up Cold War, like, yeah, all right.
That's like the Cold War never ended.
Tom Clancy.
Ended. Exactly. Cold War never ended.
Except they did it much more sloppily than Tom Clancy would have envisioned it.
Well, they got away with it.
So, no, they didn't because they got caught.
So what? What does it change?
It means nothing.
Russia's not the economic power that China is or that Germany is. In that their day to day and how you know we
but
can't really
tampering.
Yeah, they're definitely tampering. No, they have plans. They're in it for the long
game. We have plans.
They have the long game. We are a short game country.
In a few years, he's going to be in this suit. Vladimir Putin will be Darth Vader.
Stop.
Dun, or dun, President dun, of the United
dun,
States.
Dun, dun. No, I don't know about
that. Isn't that the world? Is that what you think? So, Vladimir Putin?
No, because the Chinese will never let it happen. And then the Koreans.
This is true.
No, it's too complicated. So, there you go.
swaying back and forth. Floating higher and higher, swaying back and forth. A beautiful thing taking me away. My head is spinning. It was the bell. Bell, 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 bell.
Harper's Magazine, June 2017. It's from a list of names that people tried, parents around the world have tried to name their children. That sounds all right?
Joe says it sounds good. Joe,
I'll just
producer Joe.
Choose a few of these names. These are actual things that people try to name their babies. Ready?
Yes. Go.
Tiny.
What happened to the stories?
That's a story. Okay, parents around the world attempted to bestow these names on their children, and we stopped them. Tiny Hooker. Toilet Queen.
We stopped them.
Well, I don't know if we stopped. I didn't stop.
Okay, but they were stopped from doing this.
They had actually
submitted this. There was an adult on duty.
There was an adult who had submitted these names.
And
these were rejected names. Okay, please continue. I get it. Contact.
Toilet Queen.
No, ain't gonna happen.
Giant Pelvis.
Oh, no.
Ghoul Nipple. Okay. Sex Fruit.
Ghoul Nipple?
Yeah. Fish and Chips. Fat Meat. Acne Fountain. Legend Acne Belt. Fountain. Freak
wait
Skull.
Wait a minute. But the kid, I've never seen a child born with acne. That makes no sense.
Listen, like you're looking for sense here?
We don't know what the parents are going through.
There's no context that would make that make sense. Go ahead.
Okay, you're Freak Skull.
Yeah, I can
Satan. Now, Satan I could live with, right?
He's supposed to be around.
Would you date a Dracula. Boy named Satan? Would you date a boy named Satan?
Zombie. Loser. That's really mean. I don't like that one.
Loser, wow.
Lust. Violence. Cholera. Now, here's a good one that I find acceptable.
Messiah.
That's not bad. That's the best one.
And they turned that down?
Yeah.
All those kids
are Louisiana Purchase.
Messiah.
There's all those kids named Jesus.
I like Louisiana Purchase. And,
okay.
Because you could just say that the name is Louisiana. That's not bad.
That's it.
Louis. LP.
How about this? Number 16 Bus Shelter.
Bus Shelter.
And my sister will like this because her dog's name is Tula. Nickname. Tula does the hula in Hawaii.
How can that be a name?
Well, these got rejected. They were not allowed to name their children this.
Unless that's where he met his wife.
But I would say Messiah is not a terrible name for a child.
Messiah is not a terrible name. Compared to Tahula is not a hula. Yeah, I'd say Messiah is doing really good. You know.
Fish and Chips.
You know, we're judging this. Okay, but you had another story. You had two other quick stories.
Well, they're not really stories. They're just at the back of Harper's Magazine, they have findings, like scientific findings. And one
of them... In other words, life is like science fiction.
Exactly.
Their life is like science fiction section.
Forensic scientists described the case of a woman who appeared to be the victim of sexual homicide, but was instead found to have taken off all her clothes and run around in a forest until she was bitten by insects and died.
How many insects?
I know.
What forest is this that I don't ever
want to be in?
You never want to take my shirt off it.
Here's another one. In the Amazon, a prominent shaman died of a snake bite.
I like prominent shaman. That's a good name for a band.
And two other shamans located a lost tourist by communicating with his soul through a recovered sock. Though the man later claimed he was also assisted by generous monkeys.
Wow.
That's the name of a band.
I like Generous Monkeys.
Generous Monkeys. I like the name of the band.
I like that. It's electronic music.
So that's all I've got. All
right. So you gave me the story to read.
Yes, I did.
And one of the things was this year on the X-Files, they took a fact that, and I may have the date wrong, but in 2015, Twitter had released a AI program onto their website. And as it was learning and interacting with people, everything was going fine. But at some point later in the day, the people, because of their negative comments, actually got the AI turned around, and it was starting to react negatively to people. And it got so hostile that at one point they had to shut it down.
interesting. The bot got the AI got. Well, you know, it's interesting now to get. That's a great piece of context, because I also want to reference. I don't know if you remember. It was two major companies. I don't know if it was Facebook or something like that, where they had activated these AIs, and it's created its own language and started communicating, and they didn't know what it was saying, so they had to shut it down.
Well, one of the stories now, I believe you referenced.
Didn't they read Colossus the Forbidden Story? No, it's not gibberish, you fool.
No, but one of the stories I think you're referencing,
yes,
was that when they released it,
yes,
because it was it was also set to interact with the humankind via the internet and stuff.
Well,
it was starting to get so perplexed that...
Is this a different story?
No, one of the stories that you're referencing.
Okay, I'm with you. I'm going to find that story.
One of them. It started to create its own language because it wanted to communicate with other computers because it was baffled.
Colossus, the Forbidden Brother.
It was baffled by the responses that it was getting from humanity.
Yes.
Humanity baffles me.
So... in a world. So, first of all, meet Norman. Norman Bates. The darkest, most disturbed AI the world has ever seen. But, so I was recently at a, I can't remember his name. I was recently at a conference and, The Indian gentleman who was one of the original founders of Facebook was talking about artificial intelligence. And I really wanted to get into a conversation with him, because one of the things he pointed out at the very end is like AI is like a child. And so who do we let raise it? Do we put it out there and let the entire world raise it? And he referenced the story about the Twitter thing, where it became this nasty child that they had to silence. Or does it need to be nurtured? And then once it's nurtured to a certain degree, I mean, you know, God bless Stephen Hawking, Neil deGrasse Tyson. There are minds that we should let this interact with to reach a certain maturity or mathematical or whatever, however they define it, level, and then let it go out there. Because then I think it would be more interesting to see what it comes back with.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I have a lot of thoughts on all of that, which I won't go into all right now. But I will say that it's interesting, because I found the article that I was talking about. And it's interesting you say this Indian gentleman is from Facebook, because it was Facebook. And I'll read the headline. Facebook's AI accidentally created its own language.
Yes.
Okay, here it is. Researchers at the Facebook Artificial Intelligence Research Lab, FAIR, recently made an unexpected discovery while trying to improve chatbots. The bots, known as dialogue agents, were creating their own language. Well, kinda. Using machine learning algorithms, dialogue agents were left to converse freely in an attempt to strengthen their conversational skills. Over time, the bots began to deviate from the scripted norms, and in doing so, started communicating in an entirely new language. One they created without human input. In a language sense, this one is mostly, as Jennifer says, gibberish.
But
it's interesting that AI, if given the opportunity, begins to deviate from the script to create something new, even if it looks like, and then they give you the script what it looks like.
Put it in a Google Translate.
If I may, I grew up in my neighborhood, there were the Bub septuplets.
Bub septuplets.
Their last name was Bub, and they were septuplets. And what happened
let me just sit back and think of the fate and the odds of that.
They, one of the things that happened, and I remember reading the story about it, was They started creating their own language.
Oh, wow. There's twins like that, too.
Right. So here's the whole thing. How could we expect technology to be any different? That they would want to create their own language to create their own...
I agree 1,000%. I think Colossus Reform Project was exactly what it you know, it is a warning, you know, because...
But here's the scary thing. So I'm sure that there are other cases in society where situations like that have arose, where there have been multiple births, where there have been these children who have created their own language kind of thing. And so why... In our hubris, would we think in creating our own AI that it wouldn't happen? It's we are organic and we are creating the non-organic, but yet within our programming there is an organic structure to it. Just like coding in some ways is the digital form of DNA and RNA. So if we're coding it as humans, why would we not expect this to happen?
Well, because I agree with you, of course, but I think that it comes down to, you know, we as a species, like Jeff Goldblum said, we
chaos theory.
We're more compelled by the fact that we can, and we don't wait to ask if we should. So I think that that's part of it. I think that is a big part of it. Just human nature, for whatever reason.
And you know, I have to say recently, too, do you remember Demon Seed, the Dean Koontz novel that got turned into a movie?
With Robert Vaughn as the voice of the computer.
Yes. So here's something interesting.
You know what? Are we totally geeking out now, Jennifer? Do you know?
So this AI turns around and figures out a way to
impregnate a woman with a robotic and put it to put its
essence into the child. So
into a robotic child.
No, it's a flesh child.
It wasn't flesh child.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Interesting. Okay. All right. I don't remember this movie. I just know that
Robert and Dennis Weaver was in it.
And somebody good did the score.
Yeah, Jerry Goldsmith.
Was it Jerry Goldsmith? Yeah. I think it was Jerry. Yeah.
I have the score. So here a couple of interesting things recently. One, these group of scientists have actually created this a cell printer. Like we have the.
I want the iPad.
Oh, here you go. Take that. So they created this this cell printer, and they're printing things like human ears or the human nose, this cartilage kind of things. And when they attach it,
You didn't finish the story here.
I didn't because we got into this whole thing, but so. They created these things where they can create the tissue parts of a person's body and then put it on and then it'll graft. And so I thought that was amazing.
Wait, this is a party you went to?
No. It's not a party.
It's a grafting party.
It's a grafting party. We're all grafting.
I went to a party where they were just printing out 3D prints of human body parts and grafting
them. We were just all putting them on shelves.
It was wild. I had a vagina.
I got a superfluous nipple.
Exactly.
But the most interesting thing was today.
Like Scaramanga.
I heard this story about this doctor who was a bioengineer. He spent time in one of these Middle Eastern countries that was under strike, and they brought this child in, and he had been burned, and he couldn't save the kid. He could save the kid with the technology that was available to him, and basically he went home and said, "I will never let this happen again." And these two other doctors, him and this other doctor who wasn't there, have created this new technology through building upon the core essence of the human biome, where they have now created these new structures, organic structures, that he turned around and said that if he had this technology available to him back when he was there, he might have been able to save this kid. And the weird thing is, the technology he designed, when they do a skin graft, it's a piece of skin over whatever, hair doesn't grow, it doesn't generate new, like, tissue, it generates scar tissue. The technologies these two scientists have developed, and I hope they get a Nobel Prize, when they never anticipated the fact that when they overlaid over the burn tissue, as it started to heal and develop, it actually grew the hair follicles back and stuff.
I need a fascinating soundbite,
yes,
right here.
Yes. So, you know,
Star Trek. Which, you know, she doesn't like Star Trek. She doesn't like Star Wars. I was trying
Star
to figure
Wars
out.
Okay. When I was seven.
When you were seven. I'm trying to figure out why we're friends.
My daughter will not watch any Star Wars movies.
Good for her.
What?
Yes.
You've done. How old is she?
She's 14 going on 15.
You've failed.
Good for her.
But she's a big Harry Potter fanatic.
You failed, Bill.
So there you go.
You think anyone's listening?
Of division.
So you and I love music. It's emphatic through the weaving of every fiber of this show. We love music. There's a show right now on Broadway. It's called Rocktopia.
Really? I've seen the ads.
And
you went?
I got the DVD. Somebody sent it to me. So we're going to go in April. And what they've done is they've taken rock music and they've integrated with classical music. And so all I have to say is they have the classical band, the choir, whatever, in front of them. They have a rock band with the drummer and everything like that. They do this. I wouldn't say anything, but the fact that it raises the hairs on the back of my neck the first time I encountered it, it was very euphoric. They did a blending with an opera singer of Ode to Joy with Don't Stop Believing. And the band and the choir and the rock music, they do stuff from U2. They do stuff from and I'll bring it for you. There was a Pink Floyd song that I know, but like, you know when you know something but you've never heard it before, and somebody does it in a new way, and you hear it where the themes are so germane to what's going on in the world today that it was brilliant. It was sheerly, utterly brilliant. And, you know, I watched the DVD and I was just like on the edge of my seat. Whoever did the orchestrations between the music of the classical and the rock and roll did an amazing job sewing that together. And you, as somebody who loves music, Mike, you would be awe. Struck.
All right. You got to finish your story now, Joe. You were way on a tangent there. We were with you, but you were way on a tangent.
Anyway.
There. But the Joe's emphatic about Rocktopia.
Yes,
okay.
I am.
Okay.
So, and
what'd you say?
And if I may, I have some seats for an upcoming screening of Truth or Dare.
The Madonna movie?
No, it's the Blumhouse horror version of the Madonna movie, which is taking place on the 10th of April. So if you go to fearsmag.com, my other persona non grata, and you click on the Google form, then maybe there's a promo code section in there. And if you do WBAI 4218, the first five people who respond will have guaranteed seats into that screening. So go to fearsmag.com.
What's your name again?
My name is Antigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. No. It's fearsmag.com. Click on the Truth or Dare Google form link. Fill out the form. Enter in. What did I say? Enter in. I'm having a brain.
WBAI 4218.
Yes.
WBAI 4218. That's WBAI 4218.
Okay. And the first five people who submit an entry will have a guaranteed seat into that screening.
That's right, Joe Masseri. He's like a,
oh, and it's like you a, and a guest.
He's like a Lannister. When is it?
It's April 10th.
He always pays his debts.
So there you go. There I'm like a Lannister. I always pay my debts. Yes, there debt, you go.
So that's right.
So anyway, as we were, Mike wanted me to finish up here before I leave.
Before you leave.
Norman, the darkest, most AI the world has ever seen. Excuse me, my voice is dying. A neural network named Norman. Neural network, wow. Is distinguishedly different from other types of artificial intelligence. Housed at MIT. Wow, MIT. A research laboratory that investigates AI and machine learning. Norman's computer brain was allegedly warped by exposure to the darkest corners of Reddit. Reddit has dark corners? Wow. Okay, I can believe that. During its...
What's interesting, I just got to pause you to say, you know, you mentioned before, like, okay, if we have AI who brings it up, who rears, it's a child, who rears it.
But see, that's the hubris, because that's, so here's the hubris. If we talk about AI, right? Artificial intelligence, whether it is digital or whether it is redesigned genetically engineered interface, okay? Any intelligence requires a nurturing process.
So any sentience, though, but we're talking about, we're not just talking about intelligence.
But think about a child. If you talk about the human brain, the human brain is, as some scientists will attest to, a quantum computer. So if you take this quantum computer and you just dump it onto the internet, doesn't happen in real life. Any kind of intelligence that we have has a nurturing process before it is allowed to interact.
What's your definition of intelligence?
Well, if you want to think it in the more digital terms, it's some kind of...
I don't know the Joe Masseri
term. No, it's some kind of quantitative mechanism that aggregates data and forms its own opinion and creates its own personality based on what it interacts with.
Okay.
And it's just raw, you know? So whether it's a untempered organic mass or some kind of digital mass, it still has to be given some kind of foundation before it's allowed to express its own opinions.
Well, you know, before it's allowed, you know, your statement there says so many things, things.
But how can you take
before, something? Before, okay, suggesting like, okay, there's a plan. It suggesting that it is not he or she. It is always
well,
an it.
But it can't be he or she because it's neutral.
Again, I'm just putting out that all these things that you're saying by that simple statement. For it's allowed, suggesting control. It can only do what it is allowed to do.
No, okay. But I'm saying any child is nurtured.
Well, again, the I come back to the bigger question. To what end, like, okay, what are we going to do with this intelligence? What is this intelligence going to do? And, you know, and
but Mike,
you know, you can't limit.
It.
I'm with you 100%. I'm just saying, what is this intelligence going to do in terms of where do you see this technology being useful?
Pause a second.
Where do you see it being useful?
Pause a second.
Yeah.
There are so many things that have developed within our lifetime.
Yes.
Like attention deficit disorder.
Okay.
That's
because of potatoes.
No, but we do not know what the causes of certain things are in terms of psychological and mental aberrations. Okay? We do know that at a certain period of time, we had a less frequency of these things. So
clearly.
So when we think about Frankenstein and his creating of his atom, he was looking for something to put in his creation's head, a brain. And what we have to consider is that when you have something that is pristine, as we grow up, we all have many influences on our lives.
You're saying the initial existence brain, the human child.
A child is born.
Is pristine.
Is pristine.
Okay, but again, you know, that's part of...
And then
human beings are going to have some kind of culture.
Right, but then they're raised to a certain point. And you and I both, we have children. And for all the nurturing that we do, kind of thing, and all the influences that we come into their lives, and I having two kids, okay, I am mystified by the construct of who that person is at this given point. And the only thing that we can do is be as nurturing and as influential morally and ethically as we can be to a certain point. But we talk about, you know, very abstractly how we create a script and then we have to let it out into the world and it's going to be changed. We have something.
Are you likening children to AI? Is that what you're doing?
But I'm talking about consciousness. Artificial intelligence is a consciousness.
Well, that's what I'm saying by it. When I say sentience,
so,
I'm saying it's not just an intelligence. An intelligence can be a program, can be an algorithm, it can be something, some acts.
But if you just let it out there, what if it turns around and, like we've seen in some of the, you know, warning sci-fi, what if it decides that we're like a virus and it wants to exterminate humanity, or like Terminator, or like whatever? If we create something, we have to take some responsibility for it. No?
I can't disagree with you.
So if we create it and we let it out into the world, my hope would be that it would teach us things that we would never know before. But because we do not fully understand the depth at which the technology that we create for this pristine intelligence that we then unleash uncontrolled into the world to form, how do we know when we're dealing with all these bots and stuff from Russia that it's not being influenced or shaped by some outside forces?
How about inside forces? How about there's always somebody behind the curtain? There's another curtain. There's always another curtain.
Right.
Joe.
So, but unless we have people who are taking active control to oversee it and presenting alternate positions to it, how do we ever have any hope of realizing that it will be something that is above the human condition. We can't.
This is true. This is true. Joe Masseri. Well, I know you want to go, Joe.
Yes.
I could keep you.
To be continued. TBC.
Joe Masseri, I am glad that you came and gave us some of your wisdom here.
Thank you.
Where can we find you? Fearsmag.com.
Fearsmag.com.
Fearsmag.com. What is your position there?
I am the now sole proprietor and executive editor.
Executive editor.
And sole proprietor.
How many droogie woos do you have?
Plenty. And next
plenty?
Year.
Plenty? Oh, droogie woos?
And next year will be our 20th anniversary.
Oh, wow. So. 20 years. Joe Masseri.
And a few gray hairs to show for.
All right, will you turn to listener sponsored radio? WBAI 99.5 FM.
Mothers of all mothers, you have labored for self, family, and others. Despite what your soul has seen and your heart has felt, you have never stopped loving. You have never stopped loving. Back has been tested, yet like years old rubber dough, you keep bouncing back, taking every blow, every lash, like a warrior, a true Samaria warrior. Do your thing.
All right, well, that's the CD is working very well, I can see. And you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. And I'm Mike Sargent. This has been Night Shift. Joe Masseri has been here with us, along with Jennifer, who is checking. What's wrong with your headphones, Jennifer?
I don't know what ear is what ear.
Doesn't matter. You'll, as long as you're getting both ears, that's all that really matters. So I do have a story for you to read.
Okay.
You ready for your story? And any thoughts on AI before we close that chapter?
I like that movie.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I ended up seeing the movie many, many times for some reason. It's an interesting, very interesting film. It's a mixture of things. You know, you can clearly see why Kubrick tried to make it or had planned to make it. It was interesting, but then you saw what Spielberg did to it as well. Did you like it?
Oh, I really liked it.
Are you a Kubrick fan or a Spielberg fan? Who are you a bigger fan of?
I wouldn't say either of them are. I like certain films by both of them. Project director.
Wait, you like what?
The guy who directed the Florida Project.
Okay.
Did you like it?
I did.
mysterious flying object. The Federal Aviation Administration can't figure out why two airline pilots spotted a mysterious reflective object flying over them in Arizona last month. On February 24th, one pilot told the FAA that something had passed overhead, and then a second pilot in another plane noticed it too.
Interesting.
The FAA is still pretty stumped. I used to love those books when I was a kid.
Which?
Books on UFOs.
Really? Were you a big UFO person?
I was. And Bigfoot?
Bigfoot? Oh,
Bermuda
really?
Bermuda Triangle.
Bigfoot, Bermuda Triangle, and okay.
Yeah.
You were with it. Like the mysteries of Earth.
I like that stuff. Crystal skulls.
What about $6 Million Man when he was Bigfoot? Did you see that?
You what?
$6 Million Man. He and Bigfoot worked together.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they did.
Bigfoot probably smelled bad.
No, he was just Andre the Giant played him.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You ever hear that joke that comedian said about why white people like Bigfoot so much? And then he's like, you're more likely to find Bigfoot than you are to find a black guy interested in Bigfoot.
No, I didn't. That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. So you were into Bigfoot.
I was like, you know.
You were a non-black
nine.
Guy.
Nine.
Okay, okay. Bigfoot.
Oh, and Loch Ness Monster. Let's not forget. Shout out to the Loch Ness Monster.
They still have photos. Have you seen any of the photos?
Well, I saw the ones from when I was nine.
Okay.
Have they come up with any new ones?
Oh, of course.
Really?
Periodically. Somebody had video. Loch Ness. You think he's still alive?
I don't know. Like a dinosaur or something?
Some kind of pretty old exciting. Creature. Like, at this point, couldn't they have sent, like, you know, scanning drones?
Somebody would have found him.
Yeah, they'd have found him by now.
It's a bunch of BS, but it's fun when you're, like, eight or nine.
No, it is. It is the Loch Ness Monster. It's hard to find anything fantastic when you're a child today. Like, what's fantastic to today's child?
I don't know. Stormy Daniels.
Stop. Be nice. All right, so go ahead.
So two women in France started losing their hair after eating squash. I don't like squash. Why? That tasted
You've
bitter.
You've never had good squash then.
Guess not. They started losing their hair after eating squash that tasted bitter. An investigation found that the women had suffered from toxic squash syndrome.
Whoa.
Which people can get.
Whoa.
When they,
what? Yeah,
toxic squash syndrome.
Toxic squash syndrome.
Imagine having that at the same time you're having toxic shock syndrome.
Please.
Which people can get when they eat squash containing chemicals called cucurbitacins or something like that. Cucurbitacins. Sorry.
That's really far from what you said originally.
Ooh, this is gross. Is this a tumor? A 30-pound tumor the surgeon cut out of someone. That's really gross. A New Jersey man learned that his beer belly was actually a 30-pound tumor. Wouldn't we all like to find that out? The man grew concerned when he lost weight, but his belly fat remained. A later CT scan revealed that his pot belly was actual liposarcoma, a rare type of tumor.
Liposarcoma.
And it's really gross. But look at the surgeon. He looks so proud, like he delivered a baby, right?
Yeah, well, 30-pound tumor, that's bigger than any baby ever will be.
You want me to read about orange snow? Forget about yellow snow. People couldn't believe their eyes when they saw orange snow falling in parts of Eastern Europe last week. It's possible that this tinted snow got its color from the sand and dust kicked up by storms in northern Africa. I thought it was another Chernobyl or something. Is that it? Iron Age party?
I have something else for you.
Hmm?
I have something else for you.
You do?
But you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio.
Want this back?
WBAI.
Oh, they had... That's a cute story. I like that story.
Which?
A party in Scotland 1,700 years ago where they gave out brooches. How to overcome embarrassment. Science now has a guide for overcoming embarrassment. Simply pretend that you're someone else observing the situation. Of course, that's easier said than done. Clicking on the link. LiveScience.com. You want me to read the rest?
Yes, please.
If a day goes by and you don't quietly relive the horror of some embarrassing thing you did in seventh grade, call a biologist because you're probably not human. Embarrassment is regrettably basic human emotion. This week, researchers writing in the journal Motivation and Emotion offered a deceptively simple tactic for overcoming it. Leave your head. Across several experiments which involved showing volunteers photos of people farting in public, the researchers determined that... Huh? You allowed to say that on the air?
You are allowed to say farting in public.
The researchers determined that feelings of embarrassment could be noticeably reduced when participants put themselves in the shoes of an outside observer.
In other words, like they go, they fart, they go, it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
No, please.
Okay, I'll try it.
What are you, you gonna do some, you, please record
this. You pretend
this.
You're watching.
You're like, damn, yourself. who was that?
Past research shows that a heavy focus on oneself can intensify negative emotions. For example, studies have shown that people asking to imagine publicly tripping a security alarm, failing a test, arriving at a party without a gift, or being introduced to someone who bedwets... believes that observers will
whoa,
judge...
Whoa. Being introduced as someone
you're
or
like,
to someone?
I'd like you to
someone.
Meet Mike Sargent, the bed... The,
no, but the bed as wetter, a bedwetter, as a bedwetter.
He wets the bed. I promise I'll never introduce you like that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
When something embarrassing happens to you, chances are you focus too much on your own perspective and forget about the empathy of others. Observers probably feel for you more than you know and judge you less than you imagine.
They're right. Well, we don't care that he wets the bed.
By stepping out of your own perspective and thinking more like an observer, the researchers hypothesized you might feel less embarrassed. To test this hypothesis, the researchers attempted to put volunteers in the shoes of observers during three different embarrassing situations.
Is that situations or scenarios? Hmm.
In the first experiment, 200 volunteers looked at ads for Beano, a gas relief supplement, which depicted a woman farting in a yoga class mid-downward dog. In another experiment, a different group of participants looked at a similar ad of a person flatulating in front of his or her crush at a party. That's devastating.
That's slightly devastating.
And a third experiment, yet another group of participants looked on at an ad requesting volunteers to discuss STD treatments with a group of unfamiliar doctors. After viewing each ad, volunteers were given a survey to gauge their embarrassment. Sample question, when you read the ad, to what extent did you imagine yourself being the actor who farted in the scene? Individuals who scored high for self-consciousness on a personality test reported greater feelings of distress and embarrassment. They were also more likely to want to buy the products depicted. However, in each study, one subject of volunteers was encouraged to first take the perspective of an outside observer before answering the survey. When looking at the STD ad, for example, these participants were asked how they would react if they were the doctor rather than the patient divulging their medical history. True to the researchers' hypotheses, Participants who put themselves in an observer's point of view were significantly less likely to express strong feelings of embarrassment in any of the experiments. Thinking this way in the midst of a distressing moment is counter to how a lot of us intuitively behave and might take diligent mental training for highly self-conscious folk to achieve. If you fit into that category, just remember, science says you can overcome your embarrassment one fart at a time.
Wow. So in other words,
end the evening on that low brow.
That low brow. So in other words, like you just can just kind of, you know,
like have an outer body experience.
Have an outer body, exactly.
Be like, I feel sorry for that person.
It's like, yes, no, it's not me, but it's me, but it's not me. Well, that's you know, basically it's saying get some perspective.
Yeah.
Stop feeling sorry for yourself.
That's right. So, should we see if anyone wants to say goodnight?
347-335-0818. So, you only told me one thing that you learned.
Because I haven't learned much else.
That's it. That's the only one thing you learned.
I suppose compassion's important.
This is something you learned or something you...
No, I do think it's important. I think I've learned that.
How?
Well, this article kind of talks about it, too.
Yeah.
You feel self-compassion.
How did you learn it? Like, what happened that you just learned? Like, when was that?
Well, it ties back into my other thing that I've learned, which is reading is better than television.
Okay, how does it tie back?
Well, you know, you read a book about someone in a concentration camp rather than watching The Real Housewives of wherever. And it just, makes you empathize with, while you're reading, you feel for this person, right? And then you realize how important that is in life to just, like, put yourself in somebody else's shoes and, you know, have a sense of empathy, which is something our president doesn't really have, and that's a shame.
Well, let me ask you, just playing devil's advocate, in your opinion, why is that important? Why is it important for...
Ask Jesus.
I'm just asking you. You're from your spiritual standpoint. Why is it important to understand what other people are going through? Why is it important to, you know, empathize?
Do unto others.
Yeah, why do you think that's important?
Because who's the poet that says we must love one another or die? I mean, really, it does come down to that. If you don't love your fellow person, you know, the world's just going to blow up. So for our own survival, we have to have compassion for others. Don't you think so?
I'm not disagreeing with you.
It's hard. I'm not saying it's not hard because we're self-centered and we want what we want. But oftentimes... You know, we have to sit back and books make you do that. Books make you feel empathy, I believe, like for whoever you're reading about. Television doesn't do that, I don't think, really. Maybe a little once in a while, but, you know, when you're watching Jersey, they reunited the Jersey Shore cast. I don't know. That doesn't make me feel empathy. But reading about, you know, people in Syria or whatever, you're forced to think about the world, and it could be you. That's the bottom line, right? That could be you.
Only if you allow yourself to see, you know, that's the whole see another person as a human, see yourself in them. That's the thing that is hardest to achieve, I think, for...
Well, we have to aim for it.
I agree 1,000%, obviously. What's that?
No callers?
Actually, there was somebody calling while you're talking. 347-335-0818. We have a few minutes left, but we'll take your call. You can tell us what you've learned at this point in time in your life. And 347-335-0818. Thank you. I want to know your thoughts on AIs. Do you think AIs overall are something that we should embrace and we should just get over it? And yeah, it's a good thing. Or do you think it's definitely leading, or it has a great potential for danger?
You're asking me?
Yes, I am.
What about your listeners?
I'm asking you. I want to know from you. Nobody's called yet.
Okay, I read that.
347-335-0818.
That Auden quote, "We must love one another or die." Now I have another quote about man's capability of technology is always... You know the quote I'm talking about? I gotta look it up.
No, I'm not sure.
Our capability of technology is always one step ahead of our ability to control it.
Okay. Yes, I agree with that. Yes, I do
so,
agree with that.
So, these things can get out of control.
Easily.
You know, you watch a lot of science fiction.
I do.
I don't know. They're cloning pigs now and stuff. And,
and pets. You can have your pet clone. You can have your pet clone. Bring back Fido.
I don't like that. There's so many homeless animals. Why clone? You think they're cloning humans anywhere right now?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes, they're experimenting.
You think so?
Yep. Hello, you're in the air.
Hey, Mike. My name is Anthony. I gum on Twitter as Thrash.
Man, you tweet all our music. Hey, man.
Yeah, you play a lot of really good stuff. And, I mean, some of the best stuff is stuff I can't even figure out what it is. I use all my search machines and say, man, what is that song? Now I got to make another donation, which I do anyway. But,
all right, cool.
Yeah, you know, talking about the AI and what you learn, it's like, I don't know, I got a little bit of a bias from reading the Dune series. And
okay, talk to me. What's your bias?
Well, you know, it's like you get a little bit scared of the capability. Like you're saying, we do things that we think just because we can, and maybe we should or shouldn't. We never give
right.
it
we don't
the
think about
afterthought.
That. We don't think about
yeah,
that.
It's always that afterthought that seems to escape us. We have the forethought, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is going to be great for humanity. This is going to be great. And also another problem we have is in our society, especially now, we don't want oversight. We don't want checks and balances. We don't want things to be, I guess you could say, worked out enough before we drop it into the pool.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting because, in a way, the pushback against control has fostered the lack of foresight like that. Like, we don't think things through because, you know, we don't want to be restricted. And
right.
So, in a way, it's almost as if there's an emotional component we never consider about being human. Versus our intellectual component. The intellectual component says, yes, think things through, make a good plan, yes, and yes, we will, yes, you know, but the emotional part's like, no, yes, yes, no. So.
And then there's also money. And
absolutely.
Because capitalism. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, there's a documentary, I have to say, I talked about it on Real World last past Thursday. Absolutely have to see it. It's called The China Hustle. You need to see this film.
About the Chinese corporation.
Yes, oh my God. If you see this film, it really is enlightening just to just how much we're in the dark as to what happens. How we, you know, the whole idea of, let's just say the whole concept of what our pensions are in this country has
right.
to be rethought because, you know, we're entrusting it to whoever the company we're working for has entrusted it to. And when these companies go out, well, then what? You know?
Yeah, and also, again, I think they're relaxing the restrictions again that they don't have to do what's in your best interest before their own best interest.
Obviously, because they're people. They're legally their people.
Right.
There it's
unfortunate.
It is. All right, now, Thrash, I want to ask you, what's one of the greatest life lessons you've learned? You know,
gosh.
Again, it can be small. It can be something you learned as a kid, but something like you learned that, took it with you.
Well, I mean, right now I'm going through a lot of things with my own health, my wife. I got home from the hospital last week to find my little girl cat on the floor, still warm, but, you know, couldn't brought it to the vet, couldn't bring it back. And
how old was she?
She was only 8 years old. I got the 16-year-old cat is still chugging along. Right. And, you know, I couldn't believe it. So, and this has been impressed upon me for many years, though. Just don't take people for granted. Don't take your friends. Don't take your loved ones. Don't take the things that you like for granted. Enjoy them as much as you can.
Hey, I completely hear you. Completely hear you.
Hey, Mike, you guys have a great show and have a good morning.
You too. And I'm glad. Listen, I totally appreciate you tweeting all this stuff because you obviously SoundCloud it and figure it out and put it up there. And you're the playlist. So I retweet you.
Well, people got to, you know, I want people to pick up the show and listen and get turned on to really damn good music.
I feel you. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. And listen, I hope things get better.
They will. Life is hitting me, but I keep coming back.
Hey, that's the only thing you can do.
Got to do the rope-a-dope. All right. Have a good night.
All right, man. Jennifer. That was thrash. He sends out about anywhere from 3 to 6 of whatever music I'm playing here on the show. He tweets it out. Thrash. You'll find him. I'm going to retweet him this morning. And we're on Twitter, NITESHIFTZ. Should we try one more call? You're ready to go. All right, we got a minute. 347-335-0818. This has been Night Shift. You can like us on Facebook, NITESHIFT. You can follow us on Twitter, NITESHIFTZ. You can visit us on the web online. Life is like science fiction lifeislikesciencefiction.com. And we've got shows going back for over 10, almost 15 years of Night Shift podcasts. Download and go. Well, thank you for coming, Jennifer. Oh, wait, somebody's calling. Let's see, that's our very last call. Hello, you're in the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, what's your final word here? You got a minute.
My final who?
Your final word.
You get to close the show with some words of wisdom.
Words of wisdom.
Healing.
Okay. All right.
Healing.
Great show. You enjoyed the show, sir?
For years, I've been listening to you.
Nice. Okay.
Amazing.
All right.
What's your name?
Henry.
Henry.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling.
That's my dad's name.
Yeah. How many hosts do you have, Harry? I hate a woman. And you have two guys?